Why are businesses like HelloVet choosing Apple products and services?
So we started the business 2 years ago. We had a few people who were used to PCs, and this was their first foray into Macs. But it's been super smooth getting everyone onto those devices, and everyone seems really, really happy.
Find out how Mac can help you run and grow your business at apple.co/HelloVet.
So this conversation is going to change the way you see depression. Depression isn't just sadness. It's often trauma in disguise. Today, we're diving into the trauma of depression and its hidden cause with Dr. Fred Schiffer. He's a Harvard psychiatrist, researcher at McLean Hospital, and founder of Dual Brain Psychology. So he discovered that trauma can get trapped in one side of the brain, which keeps us stuck in those old traumas and those old patterns of pain, while the other side holds the key to healing. Thank you to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio and to our audience. If you love what you're hearing, please do not forget to like and subscribe so we can continue producing this amazing stuff for you guys that'll help you change the way you live every day. So good to see you, Fred.
Hi, nice to see you.
Yes, what's going on in your world?
Well, I've been very busy writing a lot of papers and working on a book, and we have a huge study. It's an NIH study for the treatment of fentanyl addiction, and we're anticipating great results. So we don't have them yet. We're still blind, and we're going to finish that in 3 weeks. So hopefully you'll hear about that.
I'm excited. And you're so busy all the time. You love your work, and I love that so much. I find that just incredible.
I do, and love working with patients.
Yes, I can tell. So I want to get right into it. So most people see depression as a chemical imbalance. So how is that incomplete?
Well, I think that the assumption is that depression comes from a chemical imbalance. Now there are chemicals in the brain, and whether they're imbalanced or not and so forth is a hypothesis. But clearly, if someone's depressed, their brain state is going to be different than if they're not depressed. But the question is what comes first? And a lot of psychiatrists are of the opinion, and a lot of people are, that brain changes come first and then you get depressed. And I feel that that's entirely wrong. I feel that experience is what causes depression, bad experiences, and that bad experiences change the brain.
And I
just wrote a paper that's in submission. It's called the Force of Experience and it's about the way that experience affects the brain, changes the brain, and then comes back and when it gets experienced, it then changes the brain again, so the experience comes out of the brain, but it comes back to the brain, but the point is that if you have a bad experience, it changes your brain chemistry and connections and so forth. And so one of the first things that I want to talk about with depression is sort of what is depression? And I don't like psychiatric diagnoses. Now, it's clear that sometimes people feel hopeless and despondent and feel like they have no future. And that clearly is a depression. So I'm not saying depression doesn't exist. Of course it exists. In fact, it's the in the world, it's the major cause of disability of all illnesses. So it's a major problem, but I want to define it just a little bit differently. In other words, that if someone is feeling hopeless and feeling like a failure, it's very painful. We associate depression with pain, and it is pain. But if you told me that I was a failure and you were angry with me and so forth, it would hurt me. And if everybody was saying that to me, or if I were telling myself that over and over again, I would probably feel like a failure, and it would be extremely painful and would interfere with my functioning.
Yeah.
So then it would kind of sort of come true. So I wouldn't be able to go to work. I wouldn't be able to be a confident psychiatrist, and I'd go in and I'd be expecting everybody to be angry with me and say you're allowed.
Yeah, you would expect it because that's what you're used to. You know what I find interesting is I remember the bad so much. Like when something bad happens, I think this is true for everybody. You remember a negative experience and it stays with you, but if something really positive happens, I find it fades so quickly. Like I could win the lottery and I'd be like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then like an hour later, I'll forget about it. But if a trauma happened, if I broke my leg, which would be painful, but I would remember and relive that over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. That's bad things have what I would call salience. In other words, importance. In other words, it would be important if you won the lottery, and there are certain good things that will stay with you. If you win the Nobel Prize.
That might have been an extreme example.
But most of the bad experiences that we have a great importance to us, and that they're so painful that we remember them and we stay on guard for them. We anticipate them, and we're always looking for them. And so if something resembles the trauma resembles the insult to us, we kind of jump on it and take it in. I say that experience is what's really important, what drives everything. And we take in experiences based on our prior experiences. If you've had all good experiences and you've been very lucky, and I've had very bad experiences, and we both experience the same thing. Maybe there's a hurricane that's coming. Okay. Because I've had very bad experiences, I'm going to be traumatized more by the hurricane than you are, even though it's the same stimulus. Because it's going to resonate with my prior experiences.
Right.
And so that's why a good psychiatrist always begin with, where were you born, and what was your childhood like, that's where the trauma usually starts, and then gets elaborated, and people forget that and don't understand that they've been traumatized and made to feel inadequate, and then that inadequacy interferes with functioning. And gets elaborated as life goes on, and then when they're out of college and they can't get a job and they have to go back and live with their parents and they go to the basement and play video games and it just reinforces our sense of failure and leads to a severe depression or if they get into drugs, the drugs cause a depression. So all of these things are really intertwined, whether it's anxiety. Anxiety is sort of the fear of something bad happening, not mm-hmm. just something bad, but the trauma recurring. But it's not recognized usually. In other words, so people think, oh, I'm an anxious person. I get panic attacks. And they don't see that it's connected to the trauma. Or person may feel that, I'm a depressive. I got depressed twice. And so it's just like, you know, it's not a cycle. It's just, it happened twice or four times every month or it's continuous. Because once you get into the depression, it's hard to get out of because it undermines your functioning and that reinforces the idea that you're a failure, and that's so painful and it becomes unbearable and makes people choose solutions that lead to further failure, whether it's drug abuse or gambling and none of the solutions are good. Occasionally, someone will find a helpful solution. Maybe they'll find that they're a really great athlete and that might help them escape, or they might by accident find that they have a genius in mathematics and so a teacher might encourage them and rescue them. That may not completely take them out of the trauma, but they might be able to survive. Whereas most people fall a victim to their trauma and you can drown in it. And it's very common for people to drown in depression and with that comes anxiety. And one of the things that the person's anxious about is that they may get depressed again.
They're anxious about being depressed and depressed about being anxious.
Right.
It's a nasty cycle.
It's just so painful. Yeah. And that we're afraid of pain. And that's normal.
Well, I feel like people outsource their power to things like alcohol, drugs, nicotine, shopping, gambling, when they're not able to face it, or they don't have the right tools in order to face it. And so that's like an easy solution to not feel. I feel like the population has a really hard time sitting and feeling.
Well, it's hard. It's hard to feel, and it's hard to stay with the pain. And that's when I do therapy with patients, that's really, you know, the roadblock, and, you know, to try and get someone to look at their pain. And so this brings me to my book behind you, Dual Brain Psychology. And it says goodbye anxiety, depression, addiction, and PTSD. And what dual brain psychology is about, it actually leads to a way to treat depression. And the thesis is that I have discovered at Harvard through my research, doing sophisticated studies, that the trauma seems to get lodged more in one brain or the other, and that each hemisphere, the left brain or the right brain, is a complete mind or a complete brain with a mind. And so we actually have two minds, and one of them happens to hold more of the trauma. And it's easy, it turns out, that it's easy to stimulate the adult side that's healthy and feels confident, or the immature side, which is sort of like the inner child that's traumatized. And it's sort of what psychiatrists would call the unconscious, but it's not unconscious because that immature side becomes active and is the conscious person who's acting and feeling depressed and symptomatic and acting immaturely.
Right.
You know, they start drinking or engaging in promiscuous behavior, or they're desperate and they're looking for something that might bring them pleasure. That's why all the things that we call addictions all involve some kind of pleasure, whether it's gambling or food or drugs. But we're
although there was, I was using nicotine before and it would make me anxious, but but something about it made me keep going back for more, was so strange to me because I'm like, I know that if I use nicotine, it's going to cause me to have a little bit of anxiety because it puts your body in a stress response when you use it, but I kept going back for more. And so I can't explain that.
Well, sometimes, we go back to our trauma. A good example is women who have alcoholic abusive fathers often seek men who are abusive and alcoholic, and they dedicate their attention to fixing them. And and often, I mean, this is just sort of making this up, but there are, people have written books about it, in my experience, that if they are able to fix the person and he's not abusive anymore, then they drop him, they lose interest in him, and they find another abusive person.
That's just so crazy, but it's true. Yes, it's true.
Yeah, we're drawn to our trauma because we want to fix it. If you've been traumatized by an abusive father, say, if you have someone who's not abusive, what's the use?
Because then we can't fix our trauma.
Yeah,
I get it. So the more that we heal ourselves, we'll need different things.
That's right.
We abstract what we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And that might be what was happening with the nicotine, that maybe it was, allowing you to feel some trauma or something. I'm not sure. Or maybe nicotine had other benefits aside from feeling agitated. Why don't we, I know that you respond to the lateral visual thing, and it's a simple technique for stimulating the mind of the left brain or the right brain. And in different people, the immature troubled side is in the left brain, and in some people it's in the right brain. But for the person, it stays on that side. Let's show people how we do that. So you cover one eye.
Let's do it.
And half the other eye. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And how depressed do you feel, say from 0 to 10, as you look out left half of your left eye, which would stimulate
your right? I would feel like 7 right now.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I don't feel good.
And
I don't feel good at all.
And can you describe that depression, what that feels like?
I feel sick to my stomach. I feel tired, almost like emotional, like I could cry. I just feel uneasy, like uncomfortable in my body.
And how do you feel about how hopeful are you, say from 0 to 10 right now?
Oh God, about a 3.
Uh-huh.
I'm a very positive person. So it's a three is good. Three is good right now, but considering how I feel.
But by three you mean not hopeful.
Not very hopeful, no.
And so this is a very painful condition,
Very
right?
painful. Yeah, I would
Yeah,
not want to live like this.
and so if this is all you know, which for a lot of people they only know their troubled side, that you're desperate to get relief.
And any, yeah, oh my God, I would totally have a cigarette right now or an alcohol
Right.
beverage or something.
Right.
Like, I feel
And
susceptible to like negativity in this state. Like, if someone told me I did a good job, I wouldn't believe them.
right. So let's try and stimulate your left brain and have you look out the right hand,
Gladly.
your right.
Let's move right beyond that.
Okay.
All right.
So what are you experiencing?
I feel like I'm laying on a beach and I'm like super chill and nothing could bother me.
And how does that feel?
I feel so good. I feel amazing. I could do anything. Like, I'm proud of myself. I feel like a 10 out of 10 out of 10 in joy, just grateful for just breathing.
And so what I like to do as a therapist, if I'm doing dual brain psychotherapy, is try to get you to talk to the other side, and show it that that there's a part of you that's confident, that can do it, and can succeed,
Yeah.
and so your job is to sort of be a co-therapist and try to help that little girl over there, and as you succeed in teaching her that she is lovable and valuable. And that she has a good partner in you, that you can actually resolve her depression. Now, it's not simple because she's going to fight it. She's going to say, she's been in control for a long time and she doesn't want to give up control. And it's hard for her to believe that she could feel good. But the interesting thing is that on both sides, you're having an experience.
Completely 100% different experience,
Yeah, a
like
different experience.
unbelievably different experience. And I just want to reiterate to the audience that the very first time you and I did this together, you helped me understand that the little girl in me was in charge. And I actually, you asked me what she was doing, and I visualized her driving my van, essentially. And so the little girl, the 3-year-old little girl, was in the driver's seat, and that's not good. So you helped me understand that, and now she's sitting in the back seat of my van, and she's buckled in, and she's happy, and she's smiling. And now I can see when she's troubled. She gets up, and I gently tell her she's okay, and she sits back down. I give her a lollipop. And I'm able to use my adult in me to drive the van. She hasn't been in the driver's seat since. So it's been really positive.
Wonderful. And are you feeling better?
Yes, 100%. Yes, because
Oh.
we were working through some stuff on live. You guys, if you haven't checked it out, go back and listen to those previous episodes. Because what you had discovered is that I had some trauma from my childhood dealing with my father. And stuff that I had went through that I hadn't faced or dealt with that was still driving my choices today and causing that pain.
Right.
And we did that by accessing both sides of my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're talking to two people in one person. And
yeah.
And the other thing is that if I were to say to you, I think you're a valuable person and I think you're talented, which might be true, that the little girl's not going to believe me. Okay, but if you have an experience where she can read your mind, so when you feel confident and valuable, she can see that, and so you can't lie to her. She could say to me, "Well, I'm getting paid," or I tell everybody that, you know, that they're nice or something.
Yeah,
so I'm not believable, but experience is really key. So if you have a positive experience about yourself, that really means a lot. That's believable.
Right.
That you know it because you experience it, you feel it.
Right. So what you're saying is sometimes we say things out loud and we don't actually feel that way.
Right, right. That's why I think affirmations really aren't so effective. You know, I'm getting better and better every day, but I don't necessarily really believe that. But with this eye blocking thing, it really changes your actual experience. You actually can feel confident. You can feel, oh, no, I can handle this now.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we feel trapped in depression, what do you think the brain is trying to protect us from?
Well, I don't know that the brain is, in other words, you have a child who's been traumatized, who's trying to protect themselves, and they've been hurt, and so they're very active and they dominate because
right.
they want to fix it, and they're very dogmatic that they feel like they know how to fix it, they really don't. And so it's a child who's trying to fix it, but the child is not well informed. It's sort of like going to a quack doctor, and he says, "Oh, you've got cancer, and you need to have an operation." And then you go to the Mass General Hospital, and you see a good specialist, and he says, "No, that's not a cancer. You've got a lipoma, fat tissue, and we can cut it out."
Wow. That's a dramatic difference.
Yeah. And you want to know what the reality is. And the troubled mind really isn't in reality. It's living in the world of its trauma. And now if someone is living in a traumatic place, like if you're on the front line in Ukraine, you are in a traumatic condition, so you want to help you. I mean, that's the truth, is that you're in a dangerous place, but with most people that I see, their trauma is untrue. In other words, maybe they had a father who was demeaning
and
or mother. I have a lot of men patients whose mothers said, "Oh, you're a failure," and the kid was in diapers, and saying he's a failure. And I'm seeing him in his 40s when he's had a failed life, and try and teach him that, well, his mother really didn't know what she was talking about. She had her trauma, and that's not the reality. And it's if I'm able to teach that little boy in him that he is valuable, then he gets better. But it's a hard thing to teach. But in some people it happens quickly. Some people get better quickly, and some people it's a it's a lot of work, you know, because when the trauma is severe, it's hard for that little person to believe that they could be valuable.
Right. Do you see progression and then regression a lot of times, or when you're working with someone, like, what is the process like?
I think it's usually progression with some minor regressions. People are different, and some people may have a major regression, but generally, I think people feel better after their first session, and will have, the little boy or little girl will have their doubts and will react, but it's usually not a full blown regression. So I think for a lot of people, it's progressive, and I think they get better faster than I would have achieved before I had this theory and application.
Right.
And then there are people who take a long time, you know, to get through to. And if they hang in with it, they'll get better.
Right. Yeah, just like anything. So does the brain actually start to rewire itself in this process?
That would be a hypothesis. We don't have a way of really looking at brain wiring. And I don't have studies to confirm that. I think that the brain changes with experience, and again with severe abusive experiences, it's harder to change the brain. But if it's a successful treatment, yeah, I think the brain is changed. Absolutely.
Nice. And what role does compassion or forgiveness play in balancing the two sides?
I don't know that forgiveness has a role. I think understanding has a role. In other words, understanding that that you're not a failure, and that that you were lied to, and to be able to bear that, to be able to see that you were betrayed, so I don't know that it's I think you have to face that and bear it. I don't know if that's the same as forgiving or having gratitude about it. But I think knowing it and being able to sit with it, being able to sit with the knowledge that it was a betrayal, and that you were unnecessarily mistreated and lied to. I think that that's hard to face and hard to bear. But so I think the thing you really want to do with it is not just forgive it, but to bear it, to carry it, and not be hostile about it, but to bear it and to use that energy to promote yourself and promote the world and try and use it to do good. So I see anger as sort of your army. And if you have a good army, it's defensive and constructive. If you have a chaotic army, then you have rage attacks and you go around hurting people unnecessarily. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like 100 people could read the same sentence and translate it differently depending on the level of trauma that they have trapped in their body, essentially.
Exactly. Right.
I know it's hard, like even with text messaging or emailing. I've had people translate my messages in how they were feeling in that moment. I've had zero, like my message was plain and there was no ill intent, but this person was going through something and they analyzed my message and took it in a negative way. And it was because that's the way they were feeling in that moment.
Right.
So what are some things that we can do to be gentle with ourselves and other people?
Well, I think this eye technique that we're showing is very helpful. In other words, if on one side you experience yourself as competent and powerful, and on the other side as insecure, that makes you think. I mean, it's confusing.
It's very confusing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to read everything with my left side covered from now on because I just feel so good with it covered.
Yeah. We want to use that as a tool to teach the other side that he's not a failure or she's not a failure, and that she is lovable and valuable and that is what we need as human beings. We need to be appreciated and loved and not treated with disrespect and contempt, and which if we've had a lot of abuse, we wind up attacking ourselves, and intensifying the abuse.
Yeah, it makes it worse. So, how did you even discover this? Were you playing with an envelope one day, and you're like,
no, I saw that my patients seemed to change their personality. They'd come in as an anxious, depressed person, and then they'd do well, and then they'd regress. And so I saw this as two different people, in a sense, or two different personalities. And then I reread the split brain studies, where they actually cut the connection between the left brain and the right brain. And I actually went out to California and did a study with that group. And that when you do that, the two sides are two different people, because it's actually the connection's been cut. And so one person wanted to smoke a cigarette and it would light it up, and his other hand would put the cigarette out. And there are all these stories about how the two minds disengage. And then I thought that, well, that might be related to what I'm seeing, but I really couldn't do much with it until I read a study from Germany, where there was a group that had this $1 million machine that could show a movie to one brain or the other, and it was hard to determine what they were doing. They were masking the computer screen and tracking the eyes, and then I realized that they were showing the movie with this machine to one lateral visual field or the other. And I figured on my budget, I could do that by going like this. So I went
I'm
to
gonna
the
watch a movie like this. I'm gonna see what the difference is.
Actually, you'll see a difference, and then if you switch on the other side, you'll see a difference. That's a good provocative test, actually, so that's how I discovered it, from this German group. And then when I went to, I didn't have any emotional response then. I did later, but. And I think I mentioned that my first patient that day was a Vietnam vet with PTSD, and he looked out one side just with his hands. And he got very upset. And he said, "That plant behind you looks like the jungle." And so he went back in Vietnam. And he looked out the other side. And this is the first time I had tried it. And he said, "No, it's a nice looking plant." And
wow, so that must have blew your mind.
Yeah.
You're like, holy smokes, that must have changed everything.
It did. It did. And then I started using it in my practice. And then the fentanyl study that we're doing for NIH, we're using a light that we put over the forehead on the positive hemisphere. And we're finding, again, we don't have the results from this study, but we see a lot of fentanyl addicts doing very well and feeling
well. So what
do
you mean by a light? Like a light?
It's a special light that we developed. It sort of looks, this is a camera lens. So it looks like this, and we put it on the positive hemisphere. So with you, the positive hemisphere would be the left side.
Yeah.
We put the light on the other side. It's because the eyes cross over to the other hemisphere, whereas the light goes straight back.
Because my positive side is this side. When I look out the right side.
Yeah. So that means your left hemisphere is positive.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And so
that makes sense because they cross. Yes.
That's right.
So I would just put it here.
Yeah, that's right. So if you if a person has a stroke in their left brain, then their right side of their body gets paralyzed.
Right.
So most of the brain crosses over, and with the eyes, if you look out the whole eye, it goes to both sides, and that's why you have to cover half the eye and look out the lateral visual field. But it very powerfully stimulates the opposite brain. And we have an fMRI study, which measures blood flow. And we had people in the scanner just wearing goggles that permitted light to come in only one field or the other. If they looked to the left, they could only see out the left lateral visual field. And then they looked out the other side. It sort of had a cross in the middle, and there was a dramatic change in blood flow in the expected hemisphere. So if you look to the right, your left brain lit up. So we know that it does, that this simple technique that works in seconds actually does affect the brain. And experience comes out of brain information. So you don't experience what's in my brain. So I might be, thinking about a trip to New York City or something, and you have no idea because you can't read my brain information. But your experiences come out of your brain information. And so all of your experiences, so if you have the trauma built into your brain, your experiences are going to be about the trauma. And that's why we can easily stimulate negative thoughts when you look out your left side.
Because you're saying my day-to-day experiences are going to be reliving that trauma, like just the simple things?
If you let that side dominate, but you're practicing to talk to the little girl and get to know her, and she's listening to you and cooperating with you, and so, you know, for our demonstration here, you're allowing her to come out and express her deep feelings, but you're able in your ordinary life to let your mature side dominate now, So there may have been a time in the past where she dominated.
She dominated this morning when I was stuck in traffic a little bit. I was starting to get agitated. So I think a lot of people can relate to that. being stuck in traffic, dealing with difficult people. She seems to get up and try and dominate at those times.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, that these two minds are like two different people, and they want to they each want to dominate, and just like two people, and they often before they come into treatment, the two sides are often trying to kill each other. And I try and
Well,
get
for me,
them.
it was like she, my, the little girl got out of her car seat and I was frustrated. And so I said, sit back down. And then I felt bad after. And I said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And then I gave her a teddy bear and I told her that I loved her. So it's like internal parenting. It's like teaching me how to
Yeah.
be compassionate and
Right.
self-loving and understand my worth in those ways. But I yelled at her. I yelled at her
Yeah,
because she was
but
getting up.
sometimes you have to. If your child runs in the street, you
That's
have to yell.
true.
Yeah.
Yes, I said, sit down right now. You're
Yeah.
not in charge.
Right. And that's good parenting. Not to be abusive and
Didn't
demeaning,
throw
but
her. I just asked her to sit down.
yeah. And with force. So to get in the back, and so it's loving, but it's structure, and
Right.
it's
There was
a
no ill intent. It wasn't just to dominate her. It wasn't to take control. It was because she needed to get in the back seat.
exactly right, and it doesn't do her good to lead, okay, because she's only
No.
going to lead to trouble.
No, because she's going to crash the van.
And that
She's going
doesn't
to
do
drive
anybody any
over
good.
everybody.
Yeah,
A 3-year-old doesn't know how to drive.
exactly.
And
She
it's
has no
crazy
reason.
because a lot of people's 3-year-old inner child is taking control.
Exactly. It's very common. That's it. And that's yeah. That's I don't know what the statistics are, but it's probably a majority of people, who are run by their troubled trauma side, because a trauma is prevalent.
Yes,
Everybody has
you
some
can
trauma.
see it in people when they're having like a little bit of a meltdown. They almost look like a child having a temper tantrum or a
Yeah,
tantrum.
exactly.
The
Right.
way they move their arms and just their facial expressions and what they say, it reminds me of a child.
Yeah, and with Freud talked about the id and the ego, and so the ego was mature and the id was immature, but the id was supposed to be unconscious, and so what I'm saying is that the id is actually conscious, and sometimes it dominates your life, and you're an active id, and that's not doing your id any good. Your id may want to dominate, but it's not going to get far. And they want your ego, your strong, mature side, to be the leader and the parent and the therapist and the co-therapist.
Well, this whole entire dual brain psychology has been life-changing for me in a very short period of time. Where can people find out more information about you and where can they get more information?
I think that probably the best place is on my website. I have a website. It's called dualbrainpsychology.com. There's no punctuation. Dualbrain psychology.com. You can order the book from that page. So the book it gives a lot of information to fill this out more. Have you started to read the book at all?
Yes, I've dove into the first couple chapters, and it definitely teaches you how to speak to both sides of your brain.
And do you find it interesting or?
It's incredibly interesting. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I wish I would have read this 10 years ago when I was going through my addiction, like when I was getting sober, because it would have helped me understand that, like, it wasn't me. It was, and then I would have been able to talk to the trauma. Yeah, seeing it as something separate from myself.
Well, it's a part of you, but it's the troubled part of you,
Exactly.
and it needs to be attended to, and it's
Yes.
all mixed. It's that there's anxiety and depression in it, and it leads to addiction.
Yeah.
You don't get addicted for no reason. You get addicted to relieve the agony of feeling like a failure.
Yeah, even if it's unconscious,
Yeah, I mean, you're not
or
aware of
yeah.
it. That's what's going on.
Yeah, I believe this book is it would be incredibly helpful to anybody who struggles with even low-level anxiety, low-level depression. Because I know for me, I mean, our hormones fluctuate during the month, and there's different days where I don't feel my best. And I've been using your technique to tap into what I'm actually feeling and getting to the bottom of it so that I can address it. And it's helping me feel better a lot quicker.
And the other good thing about it is that when you stimulate the little girl, you can talk to her and see what you learn more about what the trauma is and what she's really upset about.
Yeah.
And
And it's usually not what I think. So it's been interesting to discover.
cool.
Yeah. So thanks so much for being here and talking about depression and your amazing discovery. Like, I'm so fascinated by it. And like I said, it works so quickly for me
Yeah,
anyway. It works
it
so
does for
quickly. It works
everybody.
so well.
It's amazing. It works in seconds.
Okay. So have you ever had someone who wasn't responsive to it?
About 15% of my patients don't respond to the lateral vision, and some people respond more to the light treatment than the visual, and some people respond better to the visual than the light. The light seems to be more
Do you have any
powerful.
theory why that is? Do you have a theory why that is?
Well, I think the light is more powerful because you're putting
Okay.
photons. It's their energy. Light is energy, and you're stimulating the brain very directly, and it's
Okay.
safe. But you're so we're trying to stimulate the brain with a credit card or an envelope,
Yeah.
It's amazing that it works this well. I mean, I would never have thought that it would have,
Yeah.
and that was a discovery that when the patient said that that plant looks like the jungle, I knew, what he, I knew, he was seeing Vietnam in my office. I
Wow.
don't have a jungle in my office. I really don't.
You don't? That's just incredible. And it's just goes to show that sometimes the simple things work the best. You know, we're always chasing these expensive fixes, but it doesn't matter really.
And
It
then
matters
we
that
have,
it works.
I have glasses that I'm trying to get manufactured that stimulate. They do the same thing as the card, but you can wear them. And the ones we're making are going to look better. They're going to be actually stylish, and you can flip it over and put them on the other side, so you can talk to both sides if you want. So they're made to stimulate to do the same kind of stimulation. And in my practice, I use this rather than the card. So I have a patient put
Okay.
these on, and they can see out and yet stimulate the hemisphere. And so I can talk to the little girl or the little boy and then the adult side at will, and we can say, well, why don't we flip the glasses and talk to the other side? And we go back and forth in our discussion, and because we want to hear from the troubled side, and talk with it, and a lot of times I have to that I can't say to the inner child, you're a good person, because it'll just throw it back at me and say, well, you're stupid if you think that.
Right.
But I can say, do you feel like you're not worthwhile? And have you ever considered that you might be worthwhile? And so if you ask it in questions, it allows, and I don't know why this is exactly, but it allows the child mind to consider things and think about them. And then I can actually have a conversation. And sometimes I'll talk directly with the little boy, little girl, so the patient's sitting there, two minds, and I'll say, "Wow, that was really hard. You know, have your mother scream at you like that, and what did that feel like?" And it gets very interesting, you know. And if someone were watching us, they would think we were crazy. Talking to two people and one person.
Story of my life. At 8:30 p.m. every night, I put my blinds down and I do my healing work. And honestly, people were watching me. They would send me to the psych ward. They're seeing me with an envelope going back and forth, talking to myself. Yeah.
Yeah. But actually,
jokes aside, it is a powerful technique.
Yeah. And I use
it. It really works.
Yeah. I didn't respond to it for years. And then I was in a situation that was dramatic. And then from then on, I've responded and I use it. And if I wake up in the middle of the night and if Freddie's upset, then I'll go down and talk to him and I can look out his side and talk to him about what he's feeling, and then I can look out the other side, and so I do this work too.
Yeah, good. Well, thanks again for being here today. I look forward to further conversations, and thank you for the work that you've produced. Like I said, it's been life-changing for me in a very short period of time.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Yes, and to our audience, try dual brain psychology. Go to Fred's website, check it out, try it for yourself, buy his book. I've only been doing it for a very short period of time, but I'm honestly have had some life-changing things shift in my world. Just understanding that we are two different people. We have two different brains. Until next time, take care, everyone.
Betway Casino. Receive a free daily spin on our prize wheel and join our amazing rewards club. Download the Betway Casino app today. 18 plus, T's and C's apply. BeGambleAware.org.